Welcome to Quick Bites by Mind Over Food. I'm Andy Friedman, and today our special guest is Dr. Erica Zelfand, a family physician at Simba Health. Dr. Erica Zelfand is a family physician, author, and speaker. Specializing in integrative and functional medicine, she's committed to helping people make their bodies, minds, and spirits their happy place. Dr. Z's healing approach is person-centered, root-cause-oriented, and nature-honing. Dr. Z knows that healing takes more than just 7 minutes of a doctor's time and loves giving her patients and clients her individualized care and attention. At Simba Health, Dr. Z's area of focus include digestion, autoimmune disease, hormones, including men's hormones, integrative mental health, and pediatrics. She's also a foodie. Her favorite meal is second breakfast. Hi, Dr. Z. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing pretty well, and I'm so delighted to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we're so delighted to have you. Before we kind of get started, I'd love to know, what's second breakfast and how can I get me some?
Okay. So first breakfast is, I'm one of those people, when people say, what gets you out of bed in the morning? For me, I go, my belly rumbling is what gets me out of bed in the morning.
Yeah.
And so first breakfast is like that quick little thing I eat when I get up just to, like, you know, help me sort of get the day started. And then like an hour and a half later, I'm like, all right, let's have real breakfast. So that's my second breakfast. And that's more of like, you know, the eggs with a side of arugula, or kind of a more proper breakfast.
Yeah. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. I'm definitely, my tummy starts rumbling and I got to jump out and get something, or I just can't function. So let's get right down to it. Can you explain to my listeners, what is functional and integrative medicine?
Sure. So I will say, not too long ago, just about every doctor was practicing integrative and functional medicine. And as medicine has gotten more and more niche and dividing in the way it looks at the body, integrative and functional medicine look at the body as a whole system in which it's not like a car, right? The body is smarter than that. It's more nuanced than that. And integrative medicine specifically is a medical system that integrates, as the name implies, sort of the conventional model with more natural approaches. So in my medical training, for instance, I learned, you know, how to order lab tests and prescribe medications and prescribe drugs and things like that. But I also learned about botanical medicine, so how to work with herbs, and I learned about clinical nutrition, which, by the way, most doctors don't really know anything about nutrition.
So true.
Yeah, there's no minimum requirement for nutrition in most medical programs.
So crazy when you think about it, isn't it? I mean, because it's so important to our health, and it's, you know, what we put into our body every single day, several times a day, and yet doctors don't really know that much about it.
No. And some of the people that I know that eat the least healthy are doctors.
Yeah.
You know, like, wow. Like, you know, pre-COVID, you know, I would go pick up my nephews from the preschool that they went to, and their preschool is right next to a big hospital. I won't say which one. So most of the kids that are there are the children of doctors. And I see the junk that those kids eat and that their parents pack for them. And I'm like, are your parents are doctors? Are you serious?
Wow, that's really telling though, isn't it? I mean, it's a funny little anecdote, but of course, anywhere in Boston, you buy a hospital. So
right, yeah.
It could be anywhere. Yeah. But I think that is really telling. And in fact, I do talk to my clients a lot, because my clients come back from the doctor and the doctor says, you have to lose weight or your BMI is not in the right place. And for a lot of them, that's just the way they're built.
Yeah.
Or that's where they are in terms of their life stage. And it's really hard not having a medical degree to kind of get them a little bit more acceptance around that, even if they're eating really, really well, you know?
Sure. Yeah. I think this is what happens when we outsource too much of our thinking to algorithms and standards of care. You know, it's like, oh, well, your body mass index is high. And it's like, well, you know, your ratio of how much you weigh to how tall you are. But some people have an abnormal BMI and they're absolutely healthy and they look healthy, you know, and they're fit and they're muscular. And they're like, I weigh a lot because muscle weighs more than fat. Like, this is not going to give me bad health outcomes.
Exactly. So let's talk a little bit about medicine and about, you know, what are some of your particular passions or you like to talk to your patients about that you think is really important for their health?
Oh my gosh.
Maybe that's too big of a question. But
where do I start? Well, you know, something that I talk to people a lot about is nutrition, you know, and if you didn't care, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
That's right.
Yeah. And what I think has happened is there are so many skills that have been lost that used to be passed down generation to generation. And these skills have gotten lost because we're so busy, because our busy lifestyles demand that we need things that are fast and convenient that we don't have to think about. And what I'm finding is that more and more people actually have no idea how to cook. They don't know how to prepare food. They don't know how to plan a menu or even grocery shop, you know? And when you look at some of the newer construction homes, the kitchens are pretty small and kind of pathetic looking. They're pretty, and the kitchens are anemic. And so people come and they say, you know, I know I need to eat healthier. I know I need to be healthier. I know that, you know, going and getting fast food every day for lunch and takeout for dinner isn't the healthiest option, but I actually have no idea where to start or what that means. Or I know I need to eat vegetables. How do I cook vegetables? And so a lot of that is aligning people with resources. So like your podcast, for example, is a great resource for people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just had, I just interviewed a chef who was talking about that, and she actually runs classes and stuff on teaching people how to cook, because I think that that is really, really key to nutrition, and to eating more whole foods. I mean, I guess that's kind of a washed up term, but eating more things that are in its more natural state rather than so heavily processed.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, another thing that I talk with people all the time about is the balance of the autonomic nervous system, sort of that sympathetic, which is the fight or flight, and the parasympathetic, which is your rest and digest state. And so a lot of people have digestive ailments, you know, they have reflux, they have bloating, or they're constipated, you know, things like that. And I say to them, well, you know, how are you eating? Are you eating in front of your computer? Are you calling something that comes in a bar shape and is wrapped like a candy that you're eating while you're driving your minivan and the kids are yelling in the back? Is that lunch? Because, you know, part of it is what you eat and part of it is how you eat it. So if you're in this state where your nervous system is freaking out and it's under stress, you're not going to make enough of your digestive juices to actually digest what you've just put in the stomach. And so we say, like, you are what you eat. If we're going to really split hairs here, it's you are what you absorb. And a lot of us kind of shove food in our mouths. We don't even chew it, right? We take like three little bites and then we take
inhale
a sip of water
to shove
it in, right? And then it sits in our bellies and then we get burpy and bloated. And then like we have some struggles to get it out on the other end on the porcelain. We're not absorbing very well in this culture.
That is really a really unique and interesting way to look at it, where we think that we're putting stuff in and our body takes whatever it needs and then we get rid of the waste. But really, our lifestyle, the kinds of things that we're choosing to eat, affect the absorption. So even if you're eating something, like you say, a bar, and I have such a thing with bars, right? Because people say, oh, this is a health food because it's like an energy bar or it's a workout bar, whatever they call it. But it's really just sort of a kind of a glorified candy bar. And they think, well, it's got all these minerals and vitamins in it. So I'm getting everything I need, but they may not be absorbing.
Yeah. Exactly.
That is really kind of revelatory. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Another thing that you said, which is something that I reiterate with my practice, but now I kind of have a different level to talk about it, which is eating what I like to call mindfully, but I don't think of it in terms of like meditation or yoga, but eating in an undistracted way. So it's not okay to eat in the car while you got the kids in the back and stuff like that. You really need to sit down at a table, dine. Mm-hmm. And I say that so that people will enjoy their food more. But what I hear you saying, which is so great, is that you'll also be able to get more out of the food.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's really cool.
So one of the simplest things that people can do to improve their nutritional status and their satiety and their health is to chew their food. And it sounds so silly to say, but yeah, you know, I remember when I actually was learning about this in a functional gastroenterology course, the teacher was a wonderful guy, Steven Sandberg Lewis. And he was talking about this, how important it is to chew your food. And in medicine, we call it mastication, which is not a dirty word.
Yes, mastication.
It's a beautiful word, right? You have to masticate your food. And he said, try and chew your food 32 times. Why 32? I have no idea, but that's the number that was thrown out there. And I remember thinking to myself, well, that's ridiculous. I chew my food. And the class was right before my lunch break. And I went to the cafeteria and I had lunch, and I got about halfway through my lunch before I realized, you know what? I don't think I do chew my food. And I counted. And I think I was averaging about 4 or 5 chews per swallow. And so there's this habit you have to break where after like a few chomps, the food has moved to the back of the mouth, and you kind of have to take your tongue and push the bolus of food to the front and go, you're not done chewing yet, and kind of retrain your brain. And what happens when you chew your food 32 times? Well, you eat a heck of a lot slower.
Yes.
So you feel full. You can actually register the full signal. You may find you eat less, but there's something about chewing food. It's almost like a cow chewing cud. It's incredibly relaxing to the nervous system. It's like a way of tricking yourself into getting calm. And then you bust up your food into smaller and smaller pieces. Each piece gets coated in saliva. Your saliva has digestive enzymes in it. So digestion has already started before you've even swallowed anything, right? That takes so much pressure off of your stomach and off of the rest of your digestive system. And things go down a lot easier.
That's really incredible. And it's something that people can just, they don't need to, you know, buy any into any diet or anything like that. No. They can just sit down and chew their food properly, basically. Yeah. I want it to be 42, because that's the answer to the everything. Life, what is it?
Life, and everything, the universe, and everything.
That's right. Life, the universe, and everything. So, but we'll take 32. Slowing it down makes a huge difference, because like you just said, it sends that signal that you've had enough. Like mm-hmm. we can't hear that signal, if you will. Hear is maybe not the right word. Feel that signal if we do that. And also if we're distracting ourselves with doing emails or, you know, or watching TV or something like that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And when you slow down, you actually taste your food. And it's sometimes when we stop and taste our food, we can go, oh, this is way too sweet. This is disgusting. You know, how have I been inhaling, you know, one of these bars every day? Or like, oh my gosh, this is so delicious. And you really appreciate your food too. It just creates this beautiful relationship. Food is an opportunity to nourish yourself, you know, several times a day. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. And I don't know what my listeners think, but I don't think that any of your doctors have ever canceled you in this way. So that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. you talked about cooking. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about like the whole ritual of meal times and stuff, and how that actually impacts our health positively?
Oh yeah. Well, first of all, even just thinking about what you want to have, say for dinner, you know, thinking about what you want to cook right there, that starts your digestive process.
Oh.
And then as you're cooking, you're touching your food, you're smelling the food, you're thinking about food, you're already actually starting to secrete digestive enzymes in your saliva, and your belly's kind of getting ready to absorb. Whereas, you know, if you're just kind of running around getting hangry, and then you, you know, shove a burrito or a bar in your mouth, your stomach's like, whoa, what the heck is this? You didn't give me any warning. This was coming. But then even the people that aren't cooking, they can smell the food cooking, and digestion has already begun. And it really helps other people in the household, if there are children present, for example, to appreciate the food more. And frankly, if you're a care provider, if you're a parent and you have cooked a meal and the kid says, I want a candy bar, you're going to be a heck of a lot more likely to dig in your heels and be like, this is what's for dinner than if it was,
if you put in all that effort. Right. And I also talk about the satisfaction of the fruits of your labor too.
Yeah.
You know, I actually have a tip. It can tell me what you think about this, but I said, if you want French fries, then make your own French fries because that's a big, big job, you know, and that is motivation. Like that's the evidence that you really want it. And you're going to probably you're not going to use any chemicals or anything like that. You're going to really enjoy it and savor it because it's the fruits of your labor. And it's not something you're going to do every day.
No. It's funny you use that example, because my father, most of the cooking when I was growing up was at the hands of my mother. But once in a while, I would wake up it would always be on a weekend, and I would smell potatoes frying.
Ooh.
And it's just that smell brings me back. And I'd come down the stairs and my father would be making home fries. He would fry it in good oil, right? Good quality oil. And he'd like chop up some onions too. And we'd have, I just have this really beautiful childhood memory of eating home fries. And I've eaten McDonald's French fries. I can't even tell you how many times in my childhood. I don't really have happy memories. I don't have bad memories associated with McDonald's French fries, but this just like warms me to my soul, sweet memory. That was with home cooked fries, not with drive through. So
exactly. Yeah. I think that's the point. And then how wonderful to have that beautiful memory associated with it too. And it was special.
So special.
It wasn't every day, mass produced. It was really special, made with love. Right?
Absolutely made with love. Yeah. So, I mean, even now when I go home and visit my folks, I'm like, so Papa, you think you want to make some
home fries? Oh, that's so cute. That's so sweet.
Yeah. That's we really bond sweet. Over it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that kind of brings us to the point where there's no such thing really as bad food, right? There's only sort of processed food and whole food, but there's not bad food. And you might think of a home fries, it's carbohydrates, or it's so bad. But if you really make it in that way that your father made it, that's not bad.
No, right. No, that was a fried love is what that
fried
was.
Fried love. I'm all for fried love. Well, yeah. we just had Hanukkah not too long ago, and I made latkes, and it's kind of the same thing. Mm-hmm. Talk about what kinds of things you discuss with your patients on maintaining their health and wellness, even if they don't have health problems yet or anything like that, how to stay ahead of it.
Sure. Well, I think when it comes to nutrition and movement, I don't always say exercise because people get a little nervous, right? So talk about just moving your body. Your body was designed to move, right? It's not just here to shuttle around your brain. It wants to have its own experience on this earth, right?
I love it. Yes.
A lot of folks, especially teenagers and people in their 20s, but also, in other decades of life, they think, I don't look fat, so I don't need to watch what I eat and I don't need to exercise. And looks may be one thing that motivates us to stay healthy, but we actually have a condition now called, it's abbreviated TOFI. Thin outside, fat inside.
Ooh.
And so even if you don't have a lot of fat that's deposited on the outside of your body, in the form of love handles or cellulite on your hips, you can still have fat deposits around the major organs in your body. You can have fatty liver disease, for example. And that can cause a whole host of health problems. And so a lot of folks, sometimes, what's happening on the exterior is a wake-up call for us on, hey, I got to start moving here. I got to go for walks with the kids or start lifting some weights, or I really got to, reel in this, piece of cake a night habit that I'm in. But other people don't have that feedback, right? And it's still important for them to care about themselves, essentially. And so something, no matter what's going on with an individual, I often ask them, you know, how would you behave? What would you eat? How would you move your body? What kind of people would you be around? How would you set your day if you were somebody who loved themselves? Right? And so a question you then ask yourself is, what would somebody who loves herself do right now? You know, I'm sitting here and I've been in front of my computer all morning and it's been 4 hours and I can feel that I'm hungry and I know I can just eat a handful of trail mix and keep working, right? What would somebody who loved herself do right now? You know, and the answer may be eat that handful of trail mix and keep working, because if I keep working, then I can have a longer vacation. Okay, fine. But maybe the answer is like, you know what? Someone who loved herself would just take a break, close her computer, go to the kitchen, make a salad, put some chicken on it. You know, yeah. Take half an hour to nourish herself and then exactly. Come back and work, you know? So that's my invitation. So the people who are listening here, you know, just ask yourself when you're sort of at this crux, what would someone who loves themselves do right now?
That is a really beautiful way to look at it. I mean, I talk a lot about self-care, nourishing your body, but it is about self-love. It really is. And to not, you know, when you love yourself, you're like, you want to take care of yourself. It's not an external thing, like you say, although there is a lot of pressure, right? out there. Yeah. But I think that's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, this has been really so, so enlightening. And I really appreciate you talking to me and to my listeners. If there's somebody, I don't know if you're taking new patients right now, but if you are and somebody's sort of nearby, how can they find out more about you and what you do?
Sure. Well, I will say I work with people all across the globe. Because
you don't have to be nearby.
Wonderful video technology now.
It's great.
It's wonderful. Yeah. Depending on the situation, I can't always be the person writing the prescriptions for pharmaceuticals, but I can absolutely support people no matter where they are. And the name of my practice and my website is Simba Health. That's S-I-M-B-A health.com. And yeah, Simba like the Lion King, only that's not what I named it after.
Very healthy. He's very healthy.
Very healthy. Yeah, he is very healthy. Yes. Simba means lion in Swahili. It also means strong. And I actually was living and working in Tanzania when I was deep leaning in, as we say. So was very inspired by the people I met there. So yeah,
Have to have you on to talk about that trip.
That was a remarkable experience.
Beautiful.
But yes, I love working with people from all walks of life.
There you go.
Across the globe. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, there you have it. Well, I just want to say, Dr. Z, we are so happy to talk to you today. And thank you so much for your time and your expertise. And I have, you know, I've been doing this health work for a while, this health coaching for a while. And I learned a lot of really great things today. So I really appreciate it.
I'm so glad. Thanks for having me. And remember, folks, what would someone who loves themselves do?
Hope you enjoyed this interview with my special guest, Dr. Erica Zelfand, a family physician from Simba Health. Please visit my webpage at mindoverfood.com if you'd like to listen to more of these Quick Bite podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about Mind Over Food or are interested in one of my free 15-minute consultations, please visit my website or email me at andy@mindoverfood.com. You can also contact me on Facebook at facebook.com/mindoverfoodtraining. And I'm also on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Thanks for listening to Quick Bites by Mind Over Food. I'm Andy Friedman. Keep an ear out for more Quick Bites coming soon.